Hello, and welcome to another episode of A Bunch of Old Guys Talking About Crap. Oh, wait, no, it's
Illusion of Three.
That's our other podcast, A Bunch of Guys Talking About Crap. Coming soon to Spotify.
Well, I'm John.
Who are you?
I'm Glenn.
I'm Rob.
I'm still John. Tonight,
and we are the Legion of Three.
Right, we're all over the place.
It's something.
Yep. Last week, we picked
The Iron Within, which is... All right, so let me just, you know, go on to my quick commentary. I didn't pick this one specifically because I am an Iron Warriors player, as some of you already know, and clearly my co-hosts know. I've been an Iron Warriors player. It's not my only Legion by any account. An Iron Warriors player for quite some time. I've liked them for several reasons. This story makes the loyalist Iron Warriors look great. It makes the traitor Iron Warriors look like morons.
Yes.
So I didn't really want to lead off with this as my first Iron Warrior story, but John did it, so it's his fault.
Yeah, I'll take that.
We know the real reason why you like the Iron Warriors so much, Rob, because you can just dip them in the silver paint and you're done.
I don't paint my models, but that's true. No, the reason I like them is I think Perturabo makes some really good points about the fact that his guys did get treated like dirt. They did get misused. They did get used for, you know, horrible siege warfare, horrible situations where they had to just, you know, pay lives to win battles and not do, you know, the glory work. They never got to be heroes. They got to be grunts. I mean, that's what their unofficial name was, the Gravediggers, before he came along. Now, Perturabo's got issues. I'm not going to pretend that he's a well-adjusted, happy man. He would rather have been an architect than a general. And I think that has not gone over well in his role. And I think that the Chaos Gods have taken advantage of him, and Horus taken advantage of him very effectively, because he is so embittered and he feels so robbed of glory. And, you know, his pride is always hurt. So, but anyway,
definitely took advantage of him.
Yes. I think that the Iron Warriors have really interesting stories. I think that they do have some really cool characters and they have some honest heroic stuff. But a lot of the time, you know, it's buried under the layers of bitterness and hurt and kind of like they feel betrayed long before Horus came along to give them the opportunity to show it. I mean, kind of like the way that Engron felt it, but Engron also out of his damn mind. Anyway, that's my little piece. The traitor Iron Warriors, I think, are still cool, but Barnabas Dantioch is the man, and there's no argument to that. Spoiler warning.
Mm-hmm. Barabbas Dantioch is just the man.
Oh, did I say Barnabas? It is Barabbas?
Yeah, Barabbas.
Barabbas, so. Right. Not Barnabas. Excuse me.
We're not talking about Barnaby Cumberbund. Wait.
There is some famous historical person named Barnabas, but I don't know what it is.
The Novan Cucumber Patch. Wait.
Yes. Nice.
All right. So, tonight's story... it's a short one. It's actually one of the first ones that I ever read, short story-wise, of the Heresy. And as I was reading it, we're going to cover it a little bit later, but the idea of the Dreadnought, you know, kind of blending in with the artwork, I was like, well, wait a minute. You know, that maybe it just didn't match my imagination the first time I read it through. But the idea of them, you know, holding this fortress against their counterparts themselves, you know, is just a really interesting story from the perspective, as told from the perspective of Barabbas Dantioch. I enjoyed it. It's one of my favorites. I go back and reread it from time to time. I just reread it again for this, but I have read it before many times.
Glenn, did you have some input?
The Iron Warriors suck balls.
Shots fired. Casualties reported.
They are. They're just whiny. Oh, we didn't go to the prom. You know, that's the dude. I mean, that's Perturabo and the traitor Iron Warriors. Dantioch is probably one of the cooler ones. And unfortunately, with, you know, we're going to learn in this story some of his ailments and stuff like that. You know, he kind of got the raw end of the deal. But he knows his place. He knows how to stand up for when he knows something's right and something's wrong. So I give him props.
Wow.
Okay. So, geez, Glenn, that's, I don't even like you anymore.
I will see you on the battlefield, sir, sometime this decade.
I'm sorry. This story just lets you know, just flat out, that the Iron Warriors are not nearly as awesome as everyone says they are, because they can't even beat themselves.
Wait, well, all right. Wait,
beat themselves. The traitor ones can't even beat themselves.
Let's just get into the
outsmarted
story.
And outclassed all over the place.
But you know, that man is a credit to the Legion, even if, you know, he's the thing is that the person they sent against him, Krendel, spoiler warning, is not up to the task. Well, I mean, he's no longer a great battlefield commander because of his ailments. And we'll talk about why. But he certainly got a mind for siege, and he's had all this time to plan to hold this thing against any foe, including his own kind. I mean, he's a genius.
Because he heard the rumors.
Right. Well, but he built it to survive whatever, and whatever includes the Iron Warriors going traitor and coming after him, which he wasn't planning for that, but he's ready for anything.
Right.
That's the kind of guy he is.
All right, pause for a second. We forgot to do the spoiler warning and potential parental advisory explicit lyrics. So you want to do that now?
Sure.
Okay. So, spoiler warning and parental advisory explicit lyrics.
Could be some salty language, mostly coming out of Glenn.
I hate this shit.
Not only today, but most days.
Okay, so I don't think we should start with where the story starts. I think we should start by talking about Barabbas Dantioch and who he is and why he is the way that he is, and then we can get into where he is and what he's doing. Do you guys agree?
You have just gone the W's right there, sir. About why and sometimes how.
Okay, so...
to bring up my old journalism classes.
Barabbas Dantioch. On the surface, he's an Iron Warrior. He's a warsmith, or former warsmith, right?
Well, he's a warsmith. He has that title kind of revoked in this story, but he was and remains a warsmith in his own mind, certainly.
Okay. Right. A 51st Expeditionary Fleet, and he was sent out by Perturabo to go take out, what is the name? The
Hrud.
The Hrud. And the Hrud's, power in masses, they can make things age and decay, and that includes armor, bodies, and he ended up losing, half of a
demi company, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, they have an entropic field that basically grows with the number of Hrud you face, and it's so powerful that it ages things rapidly. Things like stone, things like armor, things like bolters. They talk about bolters jamming up and failing. And people, because, you have these prime of their life Iron Warriors dying of old age just at proximity, not even necessarily fighting the Hrud, just by being near them will kill you. And it lost a demi company or half a demi company of Iron Warriors, and only two people survived this whole thing. Barabbas Dantioch himself and Vastapool, once his servant, now encased in a dreadnought because his wounds were so severe. Dantioch himself basically does the Doctor Doom thing and hammers a molten mask over his face to hide his damage from aging from the Hrud.
Well, okay, so let's walk it back just a little bit more. It was in the Unremembered Empire, I think, that they had this kind of fleshed out a little bit better. There was the Hrud migration, but the Hrud migration was caused by the way that Perturabo determined that they would prosecute the war, and he would not take anybody else's opinion, at all, because he was right. He's Perturabo. And so because of the way that it was being prosecuted, it caused this massive migration, which then caused, these horrendous casualties on the part of the Iron Warriors. And because of that failure during the migration, it was guys like Barabbas Dantioch that, basically failed, air quotes, failed Perturabo. And I believe Perturabo in that story told him, "I never want to see your face again." So Barabbas Dantioch did what he could only do. He made himself a new mask, put the mask on.
Yeah, so no longer will Perturabo ever see his face, nor will anybody else. But he does it, I think he not only for that reason, but also he doesn't want people to see exactly how bad he is.
Yeah,
you know, there are several times in the story where he has these racking coughing fits that, you know, people try to rush to his aid and he holds them off. You know, he's very proud, even though he is in dire shape.
Yeah, he's like an ancient man at this point, even though he shouldn't be.
Right.
But he's got that, you know, iron within, iron without. He's got that metal face on.
The unbreakable litany, baby.
That's right.
Yeah, and Dantzjak just flat out just tells Petarabo, look, you messed up.
Yes, truth to power, which is something Petarabo has no desire to ever hear.
Right. So, like he didn't rip his head off his shoulders.
As a punishment for basically speaking up to his own Primarch, they basically relieved him of command of his company, gave the command of the company to Krendel, and basically said, look, you're going to stay here and guard this nothing, Lesser Damentine, the world of Lesser Damentine.
Right.
So apparently there's a greater Damentine, because they mention that later on in the story. So apparently it's a couple of worlds, and basically it's just this, there are garrison force that gets left behind to do nothing, to guard.
But this is not unusual. I mean, this is something that and it's one of the reasons Perturabo is so fussy. The Iron Warriors often get left doing guard duty over conquered worlds or nearby the conquered world or whatever, you know, building these fortresses overlooking things that they conquered, and then the fleets move on and they're left these dribs and drabs of forces. Now, the punishment is a warsmith should not be here. This is kind of an insult to a warsmith level officer. Although it certainly worked out well for Dantzjak, because it let him use his unique talents to build the Shardenhold. But ordinarily they'd leave behind a couple of squads of guys with probably a sergeant in charge, maybe a centurion, but warsmith is equivalent to a praetor.
Yeah.
So yeah, for a praetor to have a 30-man command is not so good. It's kind of an insult. Yeah.
Right. I think they left a 10-man squad behind on Bale when the Blood Angels Legion went off to go do what?
Yeah, something really small. Yeah, and that's their home world. I mean, that's not even this. This is overseeing compliant worlds, quote unquote. All right, have we covered enough backstory for you, sir?
I think that gives us a good basis to start telling the story.
I like it.
Who wants to start?
Let me start. All right. So we start off with a discussion that the galaxy and Terra are mostly made of iron, that iron is laced everywhere in this galaxy. And it even, you know, sometimes is basically in the heart of men. And the Iron Warriors in particular have iron within. It's in their blood, and, you know, the blood within and sometimes the blood without. So we basically get kind of the foundation of what the beliefs of the Iron Warriors are a little bit, you know, that we are made of iron. We have the iron within, we have the iron without. We first come across the warsmith as he is observing the fortress, and you kind of get a sort of parade ground view, but you learn quickly that things are not exactly what they seem, because this parade ground is sitting on a tower, and the tower is vertical down. You learn that the Shardenhold is basically built kind of in an upside-down mountain, and the towers, instead of shooting skyward, shoot down towards the center of the planetoid that they're on, Lesser Damentine. And
I don't think there's an R in there. I think it's Shaden.
Shadenhold, not Shardenhold?
Yeah,
Shaden. I don't know. I've listened to the book a couple times, and I always thought it was Shardenhold, but I'm not certain. I will not argue, because I'm not positive. I haven't listened to it recently. I thought of it as Shardenhold, but either way.
Yes.
Threw me off. Which one, Glenn?
Oh, I have it written down as Shardenhold.
With an R?
But there's no R. But that's how I've been saying it too, yeah. Shardenhold.
It does say Shadenhold. I swear, yeah. I put money that it's called Sharden in the audiobook. Either way, we'll come back to that.
Sorry.
It's okay. It's fine. So you see him, you know, kind of viewing things, and you learn that the fortress is hanging upside down, effectively overseeing the interior of the planetoid that they're on, Lesser Damentine. And it overlooks a giant lake of naturally occurring promethium. So you have this really kind of epic view of these really small guys on this overlooking platform, hanging down in the core. It's not exactly the core of the world, but it certainly feels that way. They're deep underground because they talk about the fact that Lesser Damantine is a hostile, hostile death world, and that nothing could live there, although that's not totally true because there's stuff that lives underground. And sidebar, how do they have oxygen here? There's no way that there'd be oxygen.
It says it has its own atmosphere. They're deep enough down that it has its own atmosphere and its own weather system.
If you can't grow plants, you can't have oxygen. It doesn't work. It's just, you know.
40K. It's in the script.
It's right.
Maybe it's a combination of heat and water.
Yeah. If you don't have plants, you don't have oxygen.
It doesn't mean they're going to have oxygen long.
They just grabbed a bunch of comets. And
that's right.
Maybe they're making artificial oxygen.
Anyway.
Tiny breaths. Tiny, tiny breaths.
Would one of you like to continue?
Glenn, you want to get in here?
So, D'Antioch is a devoted servant of the Emperor. He's not as, I'd say, as extreme as, like, the ones who think the Emperor is a god, but he's only a few steps back.
He does say the Emperor blessed something, which I thought was strange.
Right. But he's never called, you know, in this story, he doesn't call him, you know, the God Emperor or anything like that. So, yeah, I don't think he's quite that far yet. But later on, you know, we'll learn more about D'Antioch in further stories. D'Antioch hated Lesser Dantonine. He felt it hated him in return, as though the world didn't want him to be there. And he used the world's environmental hostilities to his advantage to build in the Chardonhold. Lesser Dantioch is a planetoid crowded by debris fields, so he used all, you know, he put mines out there. He made this place just, you can't take it. And he proves it throughout the story.
He did his job, and he did it to the best of his ability.
Quite well, in fact, yes.
Which proves how skilled he was as a warsmith.
Yeah, he had apothecaries and the Mechanicum create his gene stock slave soldiers to help him build it. They called them the Sons of D'Antioch. Now, because it's done, they now maintain the building. Since D'Antioch can't maintain and run the base on a regular schedule because of his ailments, he has an iron Palatine who takes care of the day-to-day operations. And that's, if I'm saying this wrong, Tashark.
I just thought of it as Tarash.
Tarash, okay. Tarash.
Like trash, but Tarash, I guess.
So
how did you think of it, Rob?
Tarash.
Okay. So Tarash informs D'Antioch that
real quick. There are some names in this story. He really went nuts on his naming.
Right.
As you'll see in a second, Znev. That is something right there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So D'Antioch gets word that the Benthos.
Benthos, yeah.
Benthos has returned and is hailing them. Warmaster Kendril requests a high-speed insertion coordinates. And Kendril, we learn, is now in command of the 14th Grand Company. D'Antioch sends coordinates, but let's send them to the side door. Let's not send them through the front. Let's send them more on a scenic route. And the scenic route, what you got, John?
I was going to say, go ahead and finish your scenic route thing, and then I'll jump in. Sorry.
So the scenic route leads the visitors from the Iron Warriors to the Grand Reclusium.
So I looked up what Benthos meant. It's the flora and fauna found at the bottom or in the bottom sediments of a sea, lake, or other body of water. So basically, the name of their ship is Scum.
Right.
Oh, that hurts. That hurts a lot.
So when the Benthos made it to the system, they struck a mine, which made him chuckle a little bit.
I mean, he's showing off right there. He's showing off that he's better than they are, and he's right.
Yeah, and that they are idiots.
Yeah. So Krendel is, you know, like we said before, Krendel used to be his, like, second. And because Krendel didn't have the balls to back him up when he went up against Perturabo, he didn't suffer the same, you know, fate that Barabbas D'Antioch did. So he essentially betrayed his, you know, warsmith And because of that, he wound up inheriting the Warsmiths company. So he's coming back basically to his old boss to have an audience with him, which is where we're going next.
So it's interesting that they chose this place to have the meeting, because the Grand Reclusium is basically a worship center. And they kind of, in a moment, Crendel kind of dismisses it as, you know, being the old ways, that they don't believe in this stuff anymore. But this is, you know, a chaplain's domain. And as we come on, they show the chaplain Zinev. God, that's a tough name. Just not made for Western speaking peoples. Is going through some kind of, I would say, ritual or whatever else. They talk about he's basically beating with his cybernetic arm, it's a hammer, onto a forge. So there's some kind of, again, I wouldn't know if it's a religious ceremony, but it's some kind of ritual thing that's going on just as they get the visitors of Crendel and a Sons of Horus captain.
Right. And with Barabbas Dantioch, there's also another person who seems a little out of place. Anybody want to talk about who that is, at least to start?
Yeah, he's a guy in kind of flame-colored robes, and he appears to be human. And he says he comes from Greater Dantioch, and he is...
Damantine,
thank you. He's there with a message that he first kind of stammers over, but eventually basically tells us that things are not what they seem with these newcomers, that there's something that they might want to have a chat about first.
So they come in, Crendel, you know, straight up, mustache twirling, bad guy. He comes in. They're there with the his mechanicum adept. He's there.
Rockus.
Rockus. Yep.
He's there with a an emissary from the Sons of Horus, like you said.
We should talk about his name real quick. I think it's important to talk about the name of the Sons of Horus captain. He's Captain Hasdrubal Serapis of the Sons of Horus. Hasdrubal, and I haven't double-checked this, but I'm pretty sure that was the name of one of the brothers of Hannibal, the great conqueror of Carthage, who fought against the Romans and failed.
I don't think he conquered Carthage. He was from Carthage.
He was a Carthaginian conqueror. Yeah.
There you
That's
go.
Fun to say. But he fought against Rome and did a lot of damage, but was eventually defeated before he was able to conquer Rome.
You know what will defeat the Romans? Elephants. Let's bring some elephants.
Let's bring elephants across the Mediterranean through Spain and Portugal and march ourselves over through across those their mountains.
Over the
Oops.
Alps. Yeah.
That's going to go well. Elephants like mountains, right?
They also like rivers.
They made it through with a few of them. So they come in. They've got their, you know, brand new Mark IV Maximus suits. They're lined in gold. They're all gaudy. Warsmith, Crendel greeted his former master coolly at the foot of the altar steps. A moment passed under the engraved eyes of the emperor. Crendel, Dantioch replied.
Basically a Newman.
Yes. The Iron Warrior pursed his mangled lip, but let the failure to acknowledge his new rank pass. Greetings from the 51st Expedition. May I introduce Adept Gracchus and Captain Hasdrubal Serapis of the Sons of Horus. Dantioch failed to acknowledge them also. Dantioch gives zero fucks.
Right. Why are you here?
The Warsmith gave a short cough and waved a gauntlet nonchalantly behind him. You know my people, Dantioch said.
So good.
And then added, and yours.
That is literally him there just not caring. He's like, whatever. Yep, you're here. You're going to say words. I'm going to say words. You're going to be leaving in a bag.
That's right. Indeed, Crendel said, raising a ragged eyebrow. We bring you new orders from your Primarch and your Warmaster. And what of the Emperor's orders? You bring nothing across the stars from him, Dantioch asked. Crendel stiffened, then seemed to relax. He gave Serapis a glance over his armored shoulder, but the captain's expression didn't change. It has long been the Emperor's wish that his favored sons, under the supreme leadership of his most favored Horus Lupercal, guide the Great Crusade to its inevitable conclusion. Out here, amongst the cosmos conquered, the Warmaster's word is law. D'Antioch, you know this.
So he tries to kind of play off, you know, and not tell him the truth immediately, because he knows that D'Antioch is not going to follow Perturabo. He's a servant of the emperor first, his legion second, really.
Right.
He's trying to play to that, you know, before he really... Obviously, he drops the ruse eventually, but he doesn't lead with it.
He also thinks that maybe they can put one over on them because they haven't heard yet.
Yeah, you rubes out here in the sticks.
Right. So then D'Antioch replies, out here in the darkness of the east, we hear disturbing rumors of this cosmos conquered and the dangers of the direction it is taking, D'Antioch hissed. Rector, come forth. You may speak. The cleric in sapphire and gold stepped forwards with apologetic hesitation. This man, D'Antioch explained, has come to us from Greater Damantide with grave news. The priest, at once scrutinized by the supermen, retreated into the depths of his hood. He fumbled his first words before gaining his confidence. My lords, I am your humble servant, the rector began. This system is the terminus of a little-known trade route. Merchants and pirates, both alien and human, run wares between our hinterspace and the galactic core. In the last few months, they have brought terrible news of consequence to the Emperor's angels here on Lesser Damantide. A civil war that burns across the Imperium, the loss of entire legions of space marines, and the unthinkable, a son of the Emperor slain. This tragic intelligence alone would have been enough to bring me here. The space marines of this rock have long been our friends and allies in the battle with the Green Invader. Then a dread piece of cognizance came to my ears and made them bleed for my Iron Warrior overlords. Olympia, their homeworld, the victim of rebellion and retribution, a planet razed to its rocky foundations, mountains aflame, and a people enthralled. Olympia, I am heartbroken to report, is now no more than an underworld of chain and darkness, buried in rotten bodies and shame. I have heard enough of this, Seraphis warned. Crendel turned on the warsmith. Your Primarch, D'Antioch cut him off. My Primarch, I suspect, had a hand in these reported tragedies. You waste our time, D'Antioch, Crendel said, his torn lips snarling around the hard consonants of the warsmith's name. You and your men have been reassigned. Your custodianship here is ended. Your Primarch and the Iron Warriors legions fight for Horus Lupercal now, and all available troops and resources, including those formerly under your superintendence, are required for the Warmaster's march on Ancient Terra. The Grand Reclusium echoed with Crendel's fierce honesty. For a moment, nobody spoke, the shock of hearing such bold heresy in a holy place overwhelming the chamber. End this madness, Chaplain Zenev implored from the steps, of the forge light flashing off his sable silver plate. Crendel, think about what you're doing, Trash added. I am Warsmith now, Captain Trash, Crendel exploded. Whatever rank you might hold in this benighted place, you will honor me with my rightful title. Honor what? D'Antioch said. The rewards of failure? You command simply because you lack the courage to be loyal. I'm going to pause there so we can kind of go over a little bit of this, because there's a lot going
there's
on
a lot.
In this.
It's right. A big confrontation.
Yeah, flat out just saying, yep, we're with Horus and there is treachery.
Wow.
It's like, good grief. And D'Antioch just calling him flat out on it. I mean, that's...
Even Piper agrees.
That's not my dog.
That's not your dog? Oh.
Yeah.
It was mine. I muted for a second once they started barking.
So, does anybody want to go over any parts of that? Or are we just going to edit that out?
No. So, I do think... all right, let's try to get the piece of this here. So, D'Antioch already knows what's going on. I mean, he's not stupid. He's heard news. He doesn't trust it at first. I mean, I'm jumping ahead a little bit. But... he's been aware that something is going on and that, you know, the Warmaster has rebelled against the Emperor and that Perturabo has joined him. So the coming of his kin to retake, quote unquote, the fortress that he's built and reassign, quote unquote, his men, you know, kind of just seals it for him. He knows that this is all a lie and he calls him on it. He calls him and says, you know, that our Primarch has had a hand in these reported tragedies and that he's burned Olympia, which is ridiculous. And of course that's a whole traitor thing too. Something serpents. So yes, Crendel basically drops the ruse and says, yep, you're absolutely right. You guys work for us. You're part of our legion. And your Primarch says, you're done here. You're being reassigned. And obviously, he doesn't really need 30 guys. And that's not the point. The point is he needs the whole legion to fall in line to maintain their obedience, not necessarily their loyalty necessarily, but their obedience to him and the War Master ultimately. And then hand over this great prize of a fortress, because that might come in handy in the coming war.
When I read through this, I was like, you know, this is a lot like one sibling telling another sibling, Dad said I could have it. Hand
yeah.
it over.
Yeah, that's right. You know,
I don't care
right.
if you built it.
What kind of, this kind of reminds me of, this is obscure, but we're going to roll with it for just a second. Do you remember the very first Mission Impossible movie where basically, dag nabbit, what's his name? Tom Cruise comes back to his handler and he's like, you know, we were all set up. This was all falling apart. And the handler basically is like, yes, and you're the traitor. And it kind of like all sort of falls in, you know, he sees things, all the pieces falling into place that he's been betrayed. And that kind of reminds me of this too. It's like, you know, everything is cool on the surface, but in the reality, it's all kind of bubbling below. And then suddenly it all just bubbles to the top and it's like, boom, yes, you are traitors. You are, you know, scum coming in here on your warship of scum.
Wow. All right. So continue.
Yes.
Okay. Don't talk to me about failure and lack of courage, Dantioch. You excel in both, Krendel spat. He bobbed his head at Seraphis, the splinters of frag still embedded in his face flesh, glinting in the chamber light. That is how the great Barabbas Dantioch came to be left guarding such a worthless, dead rock. Lord Portarabba's favorite here came to lose Crack Fiorina?
Sure.
Stratopole and the fortress world of Golgus in the Volpa Straits HRUD migration. As Krendel growled his narrative, Dantioch remembered the last dark days on Golgus, the HRUD Xenos filth, the infestation of the unseen, the waiting, and the dying. As Dantioch's garrison turned to dust and bones, their armor rusting, bolters jamming, and fortress crumbling about them, only then, after the intense entropic field created by the migratory HRUD swarms had aged stone and flesh to ruin, did the Rakinian beasts creep out of every nook and crevice to attack, stabbing and slicing with their venomous claws. Most of all, Dantioch remembered waiting for the Stormbird to lift the survivors out of the remains of Golgus, Sergeant Zolan, Vastopol the warrior poet, and Techmarine Tavare. Zolan's heart stopped beating aboard the Stormbird minutes after extraction. Tavare died of old age in the cruiser infirmary, just before reaching Lesser Daventine. Vastopol and the Warsmith had considered themselves comparatively fortunate, but both had been left crippled with their aged superhuman bodies. He then thought it wise, Krendel continued with acidic disdain, to question his Primarch's prosecution of the HRUD extermination campaign, no doubt as a way to excuse his loss of half a grand company, rather than laying the blame where it really belonged, the Emperor's bungled attempt at galactic conquest and his own failed part in that. The Fourth Legion spread out across the stars, a myriad of tiny garrisons holding a tattered compliance together in the wake of a blind crusade. Our once proud Iron Warriors reduced to planetary turnkeys. The Primarch was wrong, Dantioch said, shaking his iron mask. The extermination campaign prompted the migration rather than ending it. Perturabo claims the HRUD cleansed from the galaxy, but if that is the case, what is quietly wiping out compliance worlds on the Coronado Drift? The new Warsmith ignored him. You disappoint and disgust him, Krendel told Dantioch. Your own Primarch. Your weakness offends him. Your vulnerability is an affront to his genetic heritage. We all have scars, but it is you he cannot bear to look upon. Is that why you adopted the mask? Krendel smiled with his derision. Pathetic. You're an insult to nature and the laws that govern the galaxy. The strong survive, the feeble die away. Why did you not crawl off and die, Dantioch? Why hang on, haunting the rest of us like a bad memory? If I'm so objectionable, what is it that you and the Primarch want with me? Nothing, cripple. I doubt you would live long enough to reach the rendezvous. Perturabo demands his Iron Warriors, all his true sons, for the War Master's offensive. Horus will take us to the very walls of the Imperial Palace, where the Emperor's fanciful fortifications will be put to the test of our mettle, and history will be made.
So why do you think Krendel is putting on this little mustache-twirling speech?
Insult to injury.
Well, but so here's the thing. Is he going to break D'Antioch?
It's an inferiority complex. Yeah.
Well, it is, but it's dumb because he's not... Who is he impressing? He's impressing... I guess he's impressing the sense of Horus guy.
Yep.
Because D'Antioch is not going to crumble over words. I mean, he's still fighting after this horrific thing. He should have been dead. I mean, he really should have died from the Harud entropic fields. He's not dead. He still serves. His men are so loyal to him that they're willing to more than die. They're willing to suffer and die. It seems kind of dumb, but he goes on this thing. You're right. He does feel inferior to him. Crendel does feel like, despite all these things that's wrong with D'Antioch, he's still the better man. He's still the better Marine.
He knows that he inherited his command through deceit and treachery.
Right. Which is nothing to be proud of. It's not honorable.
And because of that, he wants to lash out at the person that he should feel remorse towards.
Right.
But he doesn't. So he just
got more honor in one finger than his whole body. Yeah.
Right.
He doubles down and he wants to attack D'Antioch and break him down and try and attack him in any way that he can, whichever way he can see that he's weak. And the only weakness that he can find in D'Antioch is he's not a supreme specimen of a space marine anymore. He's an old man trapped in a space marine's body. That's why he uses words like cripple, you know. That's why he basically tells him that, you know, Perturabo, you know, Dad, Perturabo can't bear to look at you. You don't belong. You don't belong. We want the regular Iron Warriors. We don't want you. His true sons, you know, we want, but not you. So
it's true sons that he, you know, did decimate because of their previous failures before he took over.
Yeah.
Yeah, no biggie.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We should talk about that, too. Perturabo, when he took over his legion, he actually decimated his legion.
He found them wanting. Yeah, he found them disappointing. And so the price of that was going to be that 1 in 10 men would die to improve the other 90% of them.
So they drew lots, and the 9 had to beat the 10th to death.
Yep.
I don't remember if they were allowed weapons or they had to do it with their bare hands or what.
I'm not sure it matters. It's still pretty horrific. I mean, these are your brothers. You are culling your brothers. And not because they're loyal or they're not loyal or they're trustworthy or they're good or they're bad at something. Just because they drew the short straw, 10% of them die. And that's going to make the other 90% fight harder and win more in Perturabo's eyes. I mean, he is a hard man. He is not a nice daddy.
No.
He's no Engron, but he's still not the nicest dad.
You got anything else to throw in there, Glenn?
Yeah, he's a dick face. Never liked him. Never will like him. No.
And not just because I play him. Let's diverge for a second. Every one of the Primarchs on the traitor side is tragic. Everyone. They all have issues. They all are, you know, are broken puppets.
I think Kurgs is more gothic than tragic. He's got the eyeliner and the dark hair.
I think all 18 of them are tragic in some way, shape, or form.
They're all flawed, and only the ones that wound up with mommies actually did anything good. Roberta Greyman. Right.
Yep.
I don't think the lion had a mom.
No, he was raised by wolves.
Not a human.
So yeah, he had a mama wolf.
Yes, mom wolf, yeah. Yeah, all right, we can go on that. But I do see where Perturabo comes from. Again, he's messed up. He's not a great father. He's a lot of bad stuff wrapped into him, but at least he is tragic because he was not treated well either. You know, he was one of the ones who, and I haven't actually even finished reading his book yet, but he was not exactly raised well. He was raised to be a monster, and then he kind of turned out that way.
So it's been a while since I've read his book. Perturabo's thing was every time he could look into the sky, he could see the Eye of Terror.
Right.
Right?
It
he could see it in his vision.
He even named it.
Yes.
Do you remember what that was?
It may have been the Eye of Terror. No, I think it was the Eye of something else.
My head.
Yeah. Yeah. But no, but I mean, he was used as a weapon. He was used as a general so that his adoptive father could crush all the other people on Olympia.
Yeah, they brought him in, basically put him in a workshop and said, build weapons.
Right.
And he was like, well, I want to build nice things. No.
Gun first. You can't, nice things maybe later.
Right. Can't build nice things. You got to build weapons. But I like show tunes. Wait, I'm improvising there a little bit.
I think you may be on a different book.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure he said that, though.
Yeah. Okay.
I could be all right. Wrong.
We should probably get back to this because we still have a lot of story to go.
Okay, I'm sorry. All right, so they go on a little bit longer, put out their stance.
You know where everyone stands. I mean, yeah. It's very clear. The loyalists and the traitors basically take their sides very quickly.
The loyalists are there. The traitors just showed up.
Yeah.
Right. So it comes down to the standoff between the two sides, and each side realizes that the other side is not going to move. And they get to a certain point, and Krendel basically says, look, I've heard the arguments. Soon the Legion will have little use for you and your kind. Warsmith turned on the silent, seething Dantioch. You will surrender command of this fortress and troops to me immediately. A moment of cool fury passed between the two Iron Warriors. And if I refuse, then you and your men will be treated as traitors to the Primarch and his Warmaster, Krendel promised, like you and your Chthonian friend are to His Majesty the Emperor. Your stronghold will be pounded to dust and the traitors with it, Krendel told him.
I mean, that's the most mustache twirly thing right there.
Right.
You can basically just see him like just screaming in a tantrum.
Mm-hmm.
So in my head, and you know, maybe this is just me, but in my head, a long time ago, I heard this interview with the cowboy that taught John Wayne everything that John Wayne ever knew about being a cowboy. I don't know if you guys have ever heard of this guy before or not.
Nope.
He basically told, you know, John Wayne, you know, taught him how to throw a rope and, you know, how to throw a punch, how to throw a fake punch. He was basically like a stuntman in the early days of Hollywood. But he was an actual cowboy, you know, like walking around with a six shooter on your hip cowboy. Okay. And one of the things that this guy taught John Wayne was that you get guys that get mad, and the ones that you need to watch are the ones that get quieter as they get more and more mad. The ones that are loud, that are yelling and screaming and up in your face, are not the ones to watch out for. It's the guys that get slower and quieter, much more deliberate in their words, the more and more mad they get. And in my head, Krendel was the one that was yelling and screaming, and Dantioch was just the one that was just going, and if I refuse, just to be absolutely 100% clear, they're standing there, they're having this, you know, face-off. You've got Krendel, you've got their the Sons of Horus emissary, you've got the adept of His Mechanicum, who was there basically spying, and you've got their honor guard. And Dantioch turns after they give this final ultimatum, and he turns and he says, Vastopol, what do you think? And a giant vox boom comes out from basically when they describe the chapel that they're in, there is this statuary all the way around the edges that gives the people that are present in the chapel the impression of them being on the field of battle amongst other fellow Iron Warriors fighting a titanic foe. And this group of traitors that has now come to this chapel failed to notice the box dread hiding in plain sight right next to them. And they describe it as a box dread, and I really tried to make it a Leviathan in my head, but I just couldn't, because they said it was about as wide as it was tall.
I'm pretty sure that this predates Leviathan dreadnoughts existing. It may even predate
Contemptors.
Contemptor dreads. Thank you.
I believe so.
I really liked how they said how he was quickly painted black to blend in with the surrounding stuff. Like, hey, I got an idea. This is gonna love this.
It's funny too, because you have this Mexican standoff between the loyalists and the traitors. You know, there's basically six or seven on each side staring each other down. You know, the Honor Guard, they talk about having their bolters trained on Dantioch and his crew, but mostly they're pretty evenly matched. I mean, it's Warsmith on Warsmith. They both have, you know, a couple of followers, but it is relatively even up until the point where somebody pulls a dreadnought.
That's right. I thought they said that all 30 of the Iron Warriors that were guarding it were also there.
I don't think so.
I think it said there was never more than 10 because of the way that...
Yeah.
It's a small
room. Okay, yeah.
So the 30 Iron Warriors were probably scattered around manning guns and watching for treachery, and the only people that were there were basically Dantioch.
The command staff. Right.
But it's like it can hold many more that number, though.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Hence enough room for a dreadnought.
The most primitive of preservation instincts caused Crendel and his honor guard to spin around in shock. One of the sculptures had come to life. Seeming small in the choreographed throng of Titan attackers, the assailant's bulk and breadth swiftly grew as it advanced and towered over the astounded Iron Warriors. The Legion of Astartes were presented with one of their own, a dreadnought, a brooding metal monster, as broad as it was tall and squat set with chunky weaponry. The venerable Vastival, with his warsmith, the last surviving Iron Warriors of the Golgus fortress world. Racked with horrendous injury and premature age, Dantioch had the Space Marine entombed in dreadnought armor so that the warrior might continue to serve and keep the chronicles of the company alive. The war machine had been hastily sprayed black in order to blend in with the surrounding diorama, and with the movement, the fresh paint left a black drizzle behind the beast. So the paint's not even dry yet. That is freaking awesome. So at this point, in game terms, they're just fucked.
Right. What are bolters going to do against a dreadnought? Absolutely nothing.
Not even a dreadnought. A venerable dreadnought, which in the game I think has like +1 armor, doesn't it?
Yeah, 11 armor in the rear. You can't pop it with anything strength 4 like a bolter is.
I don't know if they have a field save or not, but I would guess back then they might have still had those.
Yeah, it was a roll 2 dice for your damage and choose the lower one.
Right.
Something like that.
So, the venerable Vastipole's gaping twin autocannons were already loaded, primed, and aimed right at them. The weapons crashed, chugging explosive fire at the two rearguard Space Marines and filling the chamber with an unbearable cacophony of battle. At such close range, the heavy weaponry reduced the two Legionis Astartes to thrashing blurs of blood and shattered armor. So the last 30K game that I played, there was a Leviathan with the Storm Cannon Array, and he did just that to a 10-man squad of my guys. They were reduced to, a thrashing blurs of blood and shattered armor. Yes, that very, very eloquently describes what those autocannons do. In 30K.
So I think we need to print that out on like a little like placard or a bases and set it where the squad was, just that phrase, thrashing blurs of blood and shattered armor.
With boots. Bloody boots.
Or boot prints.
Yeah. Well, you could leave the feet there.
Blew them right off their feet.
Yeah,
that's right. I see some new objective markers in my future.
But so the dreadnought actually kills all 4 Honor Guard in seconds.
In the blink of an eye, yeah.
It's like,
he guns the first 2 down, turns, smashes a 3rd one into the opposite wall with a power claw. Let's see.
He chain blades one's guts out and then stomps his head.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah. Crendel and Serapis backing for cover, silent pistols drawn, and the Mechanicum Adept knocked to the Reclusium floor. The Warsmith's remaining Honor Guard flung himself at the Dreadnought, lifting his bolter above his head. The Iron Warrior blasted Venerable Vastipole's armored womb tomb with firepower. So he's basically dumping a magazine towards the eye slit or vision slit on the Dreadnought, which Venerable Vastipole just basically guns his chain fist and chops the guy in half practically down the front, and then stomps on the last guy. So all 4 of them are dead. The Dreadnought snags the Adeptus Mechanicus, is it Mechanicus at that point?
Mechanicum,
yeah. The Crendel and the Son of Horus emissary basically back away because they have nothing that can hurt this guy. Neither one of them, you know, has any kind of a power fist or melt a weapon or melt a bomb or anything.
They didn't come for a fight.
And they're too chicken. They did not come prepared for a fight. That was their mistake.
Yeah.
Yep.
They came there cocky. They came there thinking that they're going to walk in, they're just going to take over this joint and push
this some old, shit.
Pop some shit, push this old guy around. They're going to come in here and roll him and take all this stuff. And they thought wrong.
Yeah, they brought a bolter to a dreadnought fight.
Right. Venerable Vastapol plucked Gracchus from the floor with the chisel point digits of his power claw, holding the Mechanicum Adept by the temples and hooded crown like an infant's doll. That's a wonderful picture right there.
Right, he's just sitting there, like, hanging and twitching.
The sickly yellow lens of the tech priest's triocular revolved in panic while his respiratory pipes bubbled furiously. I fear Warsmith Crendel brought you with instructions to catalog our fortifications. Dantioch addressed the suspended Gracchus, so that you might return with stories of our siege capability. A greater warsmith than he would have done that himself, of course. Vastapol here was the chronicler for our company. He's not much of a talker now. Vastapol? Dantioch called. How does Adept Gracchus' story end? The dreadnought's power claw attachment began to revolve at the wrist, wrenching the tech priest's hooded head clean from his spinning shoulders. His body struck the altar steps, a cocktail of blood and ichor pumping from the ragged neck stump. In the Dawn of War games, you can do this with orcs.
Yeah.
It doesn't end well for the orcs.
It doesn't end well for the orcs. Insanity! Crendel bawled at the advancing Dantioch. You're dead! The threats had begun. Captain Crendel, Dantioch hissed, this is an Iron Warrior stronghold. It does not, nor will it ever serve the renegade Warmaster. My garrison and I are loyal to the Emperor. We will not share in your damnation. The cold pride that afflicted the Legion, as well as the Iron Father, glinted in Dantioch's cloudy eyes. It seems I have one last opportunity to prove my worthiness to the Primarch. I will not fail him this time. The Shaden Hold will never fall. Do you hear me, Idris? He calls him by his first name. This stronghold and the men that defend it will never be yours. The Iron Warriors on Lesser Damantine fight for their Emperor, and they fight for me. You will taste failure, and it will be your turn to return the Primarch's wrath. Now run, you cur, back to your renegade fleet, and take this heretic dog with you. Stepping back through the archway of the Grand Reclusium with a wary Serapis, the wide-eyed Crendel thrust his pistol behind him and then back at the Iron Warriors in their dreadnought. All of this, Crendel, waved the muzzle of the bolt pistol around. Dust in a day! You hear, Dantioch? Dust in a day! I dare you to try, Dantioch roared, but his challenge dissolved into raucous coughing. As the warsmith fell to his armored knees with wheezing exertion, Tarash grabbed Dantioch's arm, patting the iron palatine's ceramite. The warsmith caught his breath. Tarash let him go, but the exhausted Iron Warrior commander remained kneeling and head bowed. Slowly, he turned to the hooded rector. So, the cleric said, you hear it for yourself, straight from the traitor's lips, our brother's hearts steeped in warped treason. So, at this point, they reveal that the rector from Greater Damantine isn't actually a rector from Greater Damantine. He drops this displacer field and this disguise that he's wearing, and it proves that he's a Ultramarine. So who wants to talk about who this guy is and why he's there?
Take it, Glenn.
So we got a champion tetrarch of Ultramar, an honor guard of Robute Guliman himself.
Tetrarchs are kind of like they're kind of like the Mournival to Guliman, aren't they? They're pretty high level. They're not just leaders of Ultramarines, but they're also leaders of Ultramar.
Right.
The 500 worlds.
The 500 worlds. So his Nicodemus is his name. You played your part well, Tetrarch Nicodemus. Are the Ultramarines usually given to such theatrically? I can't say the word.
Theatrics?
Theatrically.
Theatricality.
Theatricality.
I'm trying to find it in the book.
No, my lord, we are not. So he's hiding in plain sight using an Alpha Legion thing of, you know, changing what he looks like and even fumbling his words and all that stuff just to see what was going on the planet and to bring warning of those he thought could be loyal to the Emperor. And he, and his, their thoughts were right. His and Gulliman's. Oh, let me be candid, Ultramarine. When you arrived on Lesser Damantine, you're with your slurs and distant intelligence, I almost had Vastipul blow you from the Shadenhold battlements. So he was gonna have him killed for blasphemy, basically.
Well, you know, it's not the fall that kills you; it's the short stop at the bottom.
Yeah. Well, the last thing to go through his head would be his feet.
Right. Well, you know, he'd hit the. That's a good question. Can the friction of your fall, if you fall into a lake of Promethium, kill you from, you know, lighting on fire? There's only one way to find out, really.
Nice.
Anyway, so yes, now the pieces have fallen into place, and basically Dantiok wants to know what Gulliman wants with him, why Nicodemus is there, and basically he says, if you can hold out, you will hold up, you know, the War Master from gathering his forces together. And the longer that you can hold this fortress, the better off it's going to be for the loyalists. And he's like, okay, we can do that. That's not a problem at all.
All right, so let's take a step sideways and look at what this means. This means that Gilliman, with his, you want to call it a spy network or news network or whatever you want to call it, doesn't matter. It's all the same stuff. He's taking in information from all over the place. He kept tabs on the progress of these different campaigns. He probably knew about the Hrud migration. He probably heard the reports about, you know, which guys were in charge, what kind of casualties they were taking, and he paid attention after it all washed out to what happened to the major players. And he probably came to the same conclusion that Dantiok came to, which is, you're prosecuting this all wrong. And when Perturabo punished Dantiok by leaving him on Lesser Damantine, Gilliman probably put a little post-it note on the wall somewhere and said, we're going to circle back to this guy. This guy knows his shit.
Well, also, this is clearly not that far from Ultramar, because it's in the eastern quadrant of...
Right.
So it's in the same segmentum as Ultramar. So probably... I would imagine that Gulliman keeps tabs on everything that goes on in that segmentum as much as he can. And to know that there are Iron Warriors here, yes, that they're particularly that they're loyal, but he probably wanted to feel out either way.
Well, yes.
He may not have known that he was loyal, but at least, you know, let's see what happens when I send a man there to tell him what's going on. You know, does he say, all right, for the War Master? Okay, that's bad. We need to blow this place up. For the Emperor? Okay, you're in. You're hired. But yes, he does clearly know a little bit about Dantiok.
Right.
Yes. Yeah, Lord Gulliman knows of your art and expertise in the field of siegecraft. He suspects these skills will sorely be needed.
Yes. So he knows this guy basically got very high in the Iron Warriors. He knows this guy thinks like an Iron Warrior. Of course, he is. But
Iron Within.
For all that they are, the Iron Warriors and, you know, the Imperial Fists, they were kind of competitors as to who could be better at building fortresses and breaking fortresses down. So who better to help take a look at and find the problems with fortresses than a master of his art? So this guy is an asset to be kept. And Gilliman doesn't dispose of them like Perturabo did. Gilliman sees that this guy is a master at his art and is actively seeking out to recruit him. And like you said, if he turned out to be traitor, I'm sure the Tetrarch probably had orders to put a bolt round in his head before he left.
Oopsie.
Or die trying.
Yeah.
But since he found loyalists, now he's there for the long game, which is, you know, hold at all costs. So every moment that they slow the Horus rebellion down from getting to Terra is one more moment that they have to fortify Terra even further and prepare and hope that the other legions can make it there.
So next we have the traitor Iron Warriors starting to try to besiege the the stronghold, and they're just getting rebuffed and pushed away. Okay, we're going to go the way we went in first. Oh, that gate's gone. Where'd the gate go? It's just rock now.
And eventually, instead of them all getting in through that gate, they all crash trying to get into that gate.
Yep.
You know, again, the world is so cruel. That's why they had to ask for coordinates to get in. If you're there too long, it strips paint and armor and flesh and everything away. That's what happened to these guys. Those dropships just basically came down, went, hey, there's no entrance anymore, and died.
Yes.
Yeah, big loss.
Traitor.
So, yes, I mean, he's thought of every possible, well, not every. He's thought of many, many possible ways that they would try to get in, and he has ways to stop them. You know, he basically, there's guys basically falling off of the outer crenellations and everything because there's no good place to hang on outside. You know, it's hanging downward, so gravity is not on your side.
Yep.
He's got guys on the ground trying to bombard him. He lets loose the Lake of Promethium, and that goes poorly for everybody suddenly covered in Promethium. Well, sounds like a bad way to die.
It did a couple of nice things because, you know, once it caught fire, you had the nice sounds of the screaming and the burning, but also it illuminated the cavern so you could see better because there were spots in the cavern that they'd never actually seen light in. So,
yes, it's like the what is it, exact line? A blaze so bright it not only roasted the iron warriors within their plate, but brought light to the cavern that the depths had never known.
Right.
That's awful. It's so cruel.
Kendrell was the lackey of Dantioch, and you know your subordinates, and so Dantioch knows exactly what Kendrell's going to do right before he does it, and then kicks him in his teeth again, and it's like, dude, eventually you're just going to need to stay down.
There are Iron Warriors who are very creative commanders who are, you know, skilled in the arts of warfare and know the right answer to the problems that they face. And there are Iron Warrior commanders who are just bloody minded, who will say, if it takes 100 men to break that wall down, then I have 200 men when the first 100 die. And clearly Crendel is in the second category. He will just throw bodies at the problem, trying to solve it. And he fails. I mean, that doesn't work. That is the wrong answer to break open this fortress. And it basically bleeds him, and you find out, as the story goes on, we're going to rush a little bit here, he has to get reinforcements. So not only did he get sent there to take the 30 guys and however many, they don't really talk about the numbers, but there are human Imperial Army guys here, as well as the Sons of Dantioch, Ogryn, effectively. We don't know how many their numbers are, but he, instead of coming there to pick up these reinforcements, he has got to bleed his own grand company against the defenders and then bring in more guys when he runs out of troops to throw at the Shardenhold.
Well, he lost every single one of his stormbirds, too.
Not going well is kind of an understatement. He's got Titan support. And what happens to the Titans, John?
I was about to mention that. There are... the two different named Titans, there's the infamous Omnia Victrum, and the other one I'm going to have to look up here. In the first part, it mentions that the infamous Omnia Victrum, the Sunderer of 100 Worlds, was one of three flash-flayed war machines that managed to stumble to a sinkhole colossal enough to admit their dimensions. And there, the screaming hordes that crewed the god machines were confronted with the unfathomable labyrinth of the planet's gargantuan cave system and the reality that they might be lost for eternity in the deep and the dark. How bad do you have to, I mean, you know, you call your insurance company and you say, hey, I got a scratch on my Stormbird, or you call them and you tell them that you think your Land Raider might be totaled. You want to call the War Master and tell him, I
dropped a Titan down the hole.
I think I lost four Imperator Titans.
I know exactly where they are. We just don't have cranes big enough to get them out of that hole.
They may be dead. I don't know.
Can you imagine that falling, though?
Yeah, for a very long time.
Pretty sure we parked it over here.
it's parked there indefinitely now.
That's right. Yeah, so he's this went from a quick, fast pick up and add more forces to the already growing snowball into a death by a thousand cuts over 366 days.
Yeah.
They held out for 1 year and one day.
30 Marines versus a grand company, which is an undefined number, but it can be as big as like a chapter.
Right.
Plus all of their not Imperial Guard.
Auxiliary troops, basically. Yeah. Plus Titans.
Yeah. Right.
Plus there's a whole, they talk about being an artillery company that basically gets the Promethean Bath.
And also
one whatever, time only.
Whatever Mechanicum forces that they also had.
Yep.
So they basically fall back by section and by section and by section as slowly the enemy gains a foothold in the Schadenhold. They basically just keep falling back and falling back and falling back, which for them is up into the Schadenhold. As the bottom sections of it get pounded to dust and fall away, they just retreat further up. When the blockhouse on that level becomes untenable, they retreat through a secret passage or, you know, go back through up to the next level, and they just abandon that level, and they keep going backwards and backwards up this giant fortress. And because of the Warsmith Dantiok's planning and preparation, they have kill zones and kill spots and choke points and death traps at every single turn as they go further and further in. He's planned this thing out so that as the fortress gets destroyed, it still is a very potent death trap for anybody attacking.
Yeah, and not to mention falling on the people who are below it trying to fire up on it.
They peel off these layers, because they are. I mean, they're peeling off layers both by storming them and by shooting them. And either way, it's bad for the people who are beneath the layers that are coming down. And frankly, it's a benefit to him because he's using his numbers against them. And they show that Dantiok is running this battle. He is, you know, consulting 2D plans and telling people, all right, you know, this is untenable. You need to move up. You need to move here. Redeploy this. Go there. And he's got everything. He's been prepared for this, too. He knew they were coming. So he's got food and some medical supplies and, most importantly, ammunition, because that's a big deal when you're fighting, stacked up in these gatehouses. And they are completely defensible against, you know, just piles and piles of bodies showing the failure of the traitors to break through. And eventually they do. I mean, eventually you throw enough bodies, you will succeed. But, you know, with 30 Marines and the Sons of Dantiok and the, I don't remember the name of the auxiliary guys that are with them. I'm a little confused. However many there are, it can't be that many. They are holding off thousands of troops successfully. Right. They bleed, but they're not dying in the numbers, obviously, that the traitors are.
Yeah, and the defenders had a lot more going for them than just the 30 Marines. I mean, they also had, you know, hit Dantiok's, you know, keen design and the planet, and you know, so they had a lot working for them. So
for an assault, normally you need 3-to-1 odds. Clearly, the traitors have way better than 3-to-1 odds, and it is not working for them. Their numbers don't mean anything when they're constantly, you know, cut off.
Yeah. Should have just bombarded the planet and then been done and over with.
But he wanted, well, the thing is that Crendel, A, didn't want that to be the way he won. And B, you can't really, I mean, they can't blow up a planet with an Imperial fleet. That's not a thing. You can certainly glass the planet. You can make the planet uninhabitable. This one already was. They're deep inside the planet. I mean, like I said, they're not at the core, because that's not really a thing either. But we don't know exactly how far they are underground. It's certainly far enough that they can't use orbital bombardment to impact the Schadenhold, because they probably would have. They have to do it the old-fashioned way, and that's messy.
Yeah, not knowing the, you know, full scale of, you know, how deep into the planet is it? And yeah, I mean, you just don't know. I mean, they could have bombed it for a while and did some, you know, external damage to try to break in through a different way. But, you know, they were hasty and just going right on in, you know, and didn't do much planning and just went for it. And they paid the price.
But also they wanted the Chardonhold. Destroying the planet doesn't get you, you know, the prize that you wanted. And also, more importantly than anything, that they call this out, is they don't want anyone else to know that there are Iron Warriors holding out against Perturabo. You know, that would be disastrous for his ego to show that there are people, there are Iron Warriors that have said, nope, not going with you, we're loyal. Yeah. He's got to crush that before any of the rest of the scattered across the galaxy bastions of Iron Warriors hear it, because who knows what they might do. He might have a rebellion on his hands, and that's something that he hasn't had to deal with, unlike, you know, Istvan III, where they had to cull the loyalists from their numbers, the loyalists, the untrustworthy, whatever else. That's right. Not something the Iron Warriors did, but this is kind of a sign of that.
I thought they kind of did that when they were purging their homeworld.
No, I think that was mostly, well, for one, that was the civilian leaders of Olympia who cast them off. And two, I don't remember if there were Iron Warriors that present there or not. I'm not, again, I didn't finish reading that book. I got distracted. I had to go back to it.
It may have been a one-off, or it may have been like basically, you know, this is happening all over the planet, just in smaller numbers. But I seem to recall there being Iron Warriors that weren't comfortable with the orders they were given and questioned them and basically were put down by their other Iron Warriors.
That's not a good look in the Iron Warriors. Loyalty is very important to Perturabo.
Yeah, for the dishonor of questioning.
Right.
So, but...
Yeah.
So, it's getting, you know, we're on 366, or D-Day plus 366. They are falling back and falling back. The enemy has gained a foothold in the Shadenhold, and, you know, Dantioch is there. There's bolt round fragments and bolt round scars all over the blockhouse where they're in. He's basically down on the floor or on the table with a paper copy of the plans with his notes all over them. And he's trying to make orders, trying to order guys to fall back to this place and, you know, defend here and move there. And he's trying to coordinate. And at a certain point, somebody basically says, you know, it's done. We're done. We've held out for long enough. We need to leave. And so the guys that are with him are basically preparing to give their lives. And he's like, nope, we're not done yet. And he walks over and he starts tapping on the wall until he finds the right spot. And once he finds the right spot, he asks Venerable Vastopol, if you please, make us a hole. And Vastopol slams his shoulder into the wall and knocks a section of the wall out, revealing a hidden stairwell, which allows Dantioch, Vastopol, the Iron Palatine, and Chaplain Zenev, and the Ultramarine, Taro Nicodemus, through to get to escape. Did I miss anybody there? Tarash. He's the Iron Palatine, right?
Yeah. Same guy.
So
I think that's it. Basically, again, his command squad and the Ultramarine, who's been there the whole year, which I was sort of surprised by. I didn't think the Tetrarch would stay and fight. You know, he asked for Dantioch to give the Emperor minutes, days, months, and he's given him over a year.
Yeah. Yes.
Pretty cool. But,
so they wind up basically having the run up these steps. They're trying to escape. And, of course, Venerable Vastopol has taken damage with his legs, and he's a box dread, so steps probably not, you know, the most elegant of ways for him to go up the steps. You know, of course, Dantioch probably should have made them a ramp, but, you know, reasons being reasons, you know, he's trying to climb up these steps and winds up getting wedged at a certain point inside the stairwell because of falling rock and the way that box dreads are shaped, because they're ugly lumps of lead and are pewter or plastic, depending on which one you bought. They're horrible. I hate them.
How do you really feel, John?
I dislike them with a passion.
Well, John, being a White Scars player, wrote off dreadnoughts in third edition when they said you're not allowed to have dreadnoughts.
Long time ago.
They don't fit on a bike. We can't keep them.
That's right.
Can't make a dreadnought bike, I don't know. But continue. Please go on.
The best thing I've ever seen anybody do with a box dread is they converted it into a Leviathan using some third-party bits. beyond that, I got nothing. All right. So they're running up the steps. Vastapol gets jammed. The bad guys are chasing them up the steps. They're chewing up the back end with fire of Vastapol. So they wind up telling they try and pull him out of the dreadnought. They can't. They say, you know, Vastapol, you got to help us. He uses his own power fist to smash the sarcophagus open, and out pours basically half of Moraine. They wind up pulling him, you know, out of the amniotic fluid. He stinks. He's terrible. He's half a Marine. He's missing his lower legs. You know, everything. He's just barely hanging on. And they keep moving. And they make it to a hatch. They climb through the hatch. And now they're in a hidden room somewhere up on near the surface of Lesser Damantine. Inside there, they have another hidden store of armor and weaponry and the piece de resistance. They have a teleporter that is linked to a failsafe, which I'll let one of you guys start talking about now.
So what the deal is here is he lied a little bit. He basically told them that this fortress would never fall. And that's not true. It's funny, when you build a fortress that's effectively hanging to the ceiling upside down, that gravity can actually be your kind of last-ditch thing. Because what it is that they have it wired that when they activate the teleporter, it basically sets off a series of explosions that drops the fortress off of the ceiling to all the attackers below. This fortress will never serve the Warmaster, is what Dantiok says, and he proves it by dropping it on the remnants of Krendel's forces below. And anybody who's inside, too. I mean, he consigns the remainder of his men to death, which, you know, there weren't that many left probably alive of the 30. And all the sons of Dantiok, they're all dead, and the remainder of the Imperial army that were serving him, they all die. I mean, there's lots of people who die horribly here, but mostly Krendel's men, you know, the guys who felt that their success was in sight, that they had just about taken the Chardonhold, the last bastions of it, when suddenly it all comes raining down. And now Dantiok is going to take his ride.
That's right. So they're going to use the teleporter to transport to the Benthos and take the bridge by surprise, because he figures they've basically committed almost everything to taking this fortress. So there's a line in here where he says basically the enemy are the weakest when they're just about to win.
Right.
And, you know, just like that, in a lot of games, it's the case. You know, it's like Risk. You've got to go and weaken yourself in order to try and snatch victory. Yep. And at this point, Krendel has basically extended his last everything to try and take the fortress. And it's at this point where he basically calls him back and he says, you know, when I said, told you this would never fall, it says, then he opened channels on all floors and vox hailers across the citadel. Idris Krendel, Dantiok hissed. Captain, this is your warsmith. I know that you're there, somewhere in my fortress. I know you keep company with traitors and stand in the shadow of the Collegia Titanica's god machines. Faced with such odds, I am speaking to you for the last time. And I say to you again that this fortress will not serve the interests of our unloving father or his renegade warmaster. But, Captain, I was wrong when I told you that the Chardonhold would never fall. Idris, it will fall. And with that, the Warsmith locked off the channels and initiated the trigger for both the teleporter and the detonators. It's at this point that they teleport from that area on board the Benthos. Now, how do they get from the teleporter to be able to lock onto the Benthos? Because when they first showed up for that original meeting, the Warsmith Dantiok had a teleport homer secreted aboard the Sons of Horus transport that they came in on.
Dun, dun, dun.
Knowing that they're not going to use it for an assault.
That's
because he's going to need to use it to get back away.
That's when you come prepared for a fight. He knew when they showed up the first time to be ready and prepare. And because of that preparation, when they got to this point, bang, he hits the button. He teleports from this area directly to a hangar bay aboard the Benthos. And they're there without a single fight. And undetected, too, because they teleported inside of a ship that nobody was in. So now they're aboard the Benthos, and they start to kind of panic a little bit, like they're going to have to fight. And Dantiok's like, you know, basically, guys, keep calm. We're Iron Warriors. We're aboard an Iron Warriors vessel.
Yep.
We're good.
What about Tychodermus over here? What are we going to do about him? Don't worry about it. No one cares. Just go.
Nobody's going to question. Just act casual.
Just fly casually.
That's right. Move your hands like you're not stoned. So they basically march up to the bridge, take the bridge with as little bloodshed as possible. They take over the ship, and they're out of there. That's gangster right there.
You didn't want to talk about the last confrontation with the Sons of Horus, Hasdrubal?
Go for it.
I mean, it's not super meaningful. Just
no.
Okay, we can skip it. No big deal. All right, so, no, go ahead. Let's just say, all right, what did you guys think of the story?
I like the story. I liked how well-prepared Dantiok was. He is a true warsmith because he not only can wage a war, he can also can defend a war.
Yep.
So I tip my hat to him. He's one Iron Warrior I would say that I do like.
Okay. John?
I think you can tell that I didn't like this story at all.
No, not a little bit.
No, I thought this was a great story. You know, like every story, there's a couple of spots in it that are like, oh, come on. But, you know, you just kind of have to let it go. The fact that, you know, the teleport Homer didn't get discovered in the year and a day that they had been during this fight. Maybe, you know, I could understand it if, you know, maybe he somehow secreted it on there, or at some point during this whole engagement somehow snuck somebody over there with like a, you know, boarding torpedo or something. You know, there's a lot of things that go on during war. There's a lot of confusion. Like in the previous story, you know, the Alpha Legion operative getting aboard the 3rd Legion flagship in an ammo crate. It's like, you know, things could get done, but I just roll with it. I love the fact that inverted fortress, to me, once I got to that line, the first time I read it through, I was like, wait a minute, inverted? Did I miss something? And I went back and I started reading the story again from the beginning, now with this in my head. And it started to make a lot more sense, the descriptions that they have in the beginning with them looking out over the vistas and everything else. So it's very interesting. I'd never considered that before. So my hat has to tip to Rob Sanders for coming up with some of these ideas. Like Glenn said, you know, he's an Iron Warrior. He's probably one of the first ones I ever read about that I was like, you know, I like this guy. He's pretty cool. A lot of the visuals in this story I liked a lot. I liked the idea of the chaplain beating on the anvil as part of the ceremony, and how his Crozius Arcanum takes the form of a blacksmith's hammer. I thought it was really interesting how he had, they described his arm, his cybernetic arm, having been replaced, as being like a pendulum. You guys, you know that there's flails and there's different types of weapons. In any kind of a siege, if you've got to hit an opponent who has a shield, you need a weapon that swings like a pendulum. And when he was describing the Crozius Arcanum and him smacking the anvil with the hammer, the Crozius, I thought, you know, that's a great application for an actual real-world weapon during a siege. You got two shield walls that come crashing up against each other. That chaplain is going to smack his arm into the shield in front of him, and the Crozius is going to arc over the shield and smack the guy behind. So that, you know, again, I don't know if this guy, you know, studies medieval weaponry and stuff, but it's obvious that, you know, he had some input in that. The Prometheum, you know, setting that on fire, burning guys alive. That's always fun for everybody except the guys that get burnt alive. it's just a fantastic story. It wasn't a hugely long story, but it has a lot of points to other places. You know, it talks about what happened to the Vastopol and Dantioch after the, crud, disastrous crud migration. I remember the one scene, I think it's in Unremembered Empire, where they're going after the crud. They're seeking out their Warren, and the one Marine who's kind of scouting in front of the rest goes around a corner. He turns the corner. He has just enough time to turn and say run right before he completely turns to dust. Because of the amount of crud that were coming towards on their migration. He got hit by so much time so fast, he turned to dust. Him, his armor, everything that he was there. He had just enough time to turn to his brothers and say, run. You know, when you're fighting an entity like that, like the crud, in that many numbers, you have no choice but to fail. You can't get near them. You have to seek them out to wipe them out. And if you try and seek them out, you die. It's an impossible mission, the way that they were prosecuting it.
Yep. So.
Life Eater from Outer Space. They should have done it against them. Done.
Well, the thing is you can't go around orbital bombarding everything. That's not the way it works. You have to put boots on the ground and bring things out.
Not against something like that.
Well...
Same as
you don't know
Arachnoid.
That they're dead if you bombard them, especially if the Hrud are really space gaven, and there's speculation on both sides.
Yeah.
You know, if they live in underground warrens, then you can't bombard them. I mean, this is all right. We're jumping a little bit in the first story in the Beast Rises books. I don't remember the name of it. They're fighting against a alien race that lives underground. Which is basically fleeing the orcs, you find later. And they can't bombard them. They have to go down there, and they have to go into the holes, very Starship Trooper-esque,
right.
and fight them. And Starship Troopers, they do drop nukes into holes, but they still have to go into the hole to drop the nuke. They can't just launch it from orbit and say, all right, good game. There's you always have to have people fighting, hand-to-hand, which is a little silly.
Life Eater virus, it'll just fine. It'll get everywhere.
And that world is useless. All right.
That's totally fine. You wiped out the Hrud.
I like the story. I don't like... It doesn't paint the Iron Warriors in a good light. I mean, it paints Dantioch and the Loyalists in a good light, but Crendel's an idiot. I mean, he's a bad commander, and this whole story shows he's a bad commander and whatever else. So that's why I didn't want to be my focus story. I think the best light... Besides the Siege of Terra so far, I think Angel Exterminatus paints a pretty good light on Perturabo.
Yes.
His architect side and his dreams of things before, being used as a weapon and becoming just embittered by everything. I mean, he can't trust anybody likes him is what's the problem. Even when Horus tells him that, you're the man, I trust you, you're going to tear apart the golden, they're going to tear apart Terra. You're going to totally, you'll show Dorne who's boss.
Perturabo
can't even let himself trust that. He still feels, that Horus is whispering lies to him, even as much as he wants to believe it, because he wants the approval of his brothers. And he wants the approval of his father and Horus, but he still can't trust it even when they say it.
Yeah. I think one of his lines in there is that you're the only one I can trust. You're the only one I can count on.
Right, which is true because
the other ones are Stark Raven
now demonic crazy people. Yeah, I mean he's the only one who really doesn't fail the War Master. Fulgrim goes off, does his own thing. Angron cannot take orders for nothing. Mm-hmm. Magnus has got his own agenda and doesn't really pay attention to anything else. And Mortarion is also so embittered. But also, serving Nurgle, he too has an agenda that the War Master can't completely control and trust.
Alpharius had his operatives doing their missions, but he basically said, I'm out.
Right.
So.
wheels within wheels outside of the command and control of Horus. So, yes, he was the last one that he could rely on, and he still wouldn't believe it. So, all right. Do we have any ideas what we're going to do next time? Is it Glenn? Your
yep. I think it's going to be Garrow, Legion of One.
Ooh, fine it's choice.
A Legion of Three doing a Legion of One?
That's right.
It's confusing.
It'll be all right. We can manhandle through that.
The confusion. Should have been our first episode, is what it is.
Oh, jeez.
It's too late now. All right.
So bad at math.
It's not just math. It's simple counting. We can't even do that.
Jeez.
Thanks, everybody. We appreciate your time and joining us for The Iron Within, a great story. We forgot to mention, this is by Rob Saunders, who we're giving a lot of attention to, not really on purpose. He's a fine writer. Take nothing away from him. But we didn't mean to be covering so many of his stories all together here.
He's good.
Stuff. Yeah, he's really good.
No complaint. No argument.
All right. So who wrote Legion of One?
John French, I think.
Nope. I think that's James Swallow.
Oh, so close. I thought John French handled all the hero stories, but I could be wrong.
Nope.
And clearly, I just
James Swallow.
Moving on.
All right, guys.
Thank you. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.